Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There was a heads-up moment last week in America's march into the arms of Ritalin. An FDA advisory panel, by a narrow vote, recommended a black box warning on Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, and the whole family of stimulants used to treat ADD, attention deficit disorder. The risks? Heart attack, stroke, and sudden death. Those most at risk, adult users. And here was the surprise. Millions of kids are on Ritalin, but it's adult use that has exploded lately. Some for adult ADD, some just to focus and lose weight. Performance-enhancing Ritalin use. It's on Desperate Housewives. It may be in your house. Up next on Point, adult ADD and the surge in grown-ups on Ritalin. Joining me first from Arlington, Virginia, is Catherine Richard. She's associate editor of FDA Week, a trade publication that covers drug policy. She covered last week's advisory panel meeting and its vote for a black box warning. Catherine, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So here was a very close vote, 8-7. It appears as though the FDA may not implement. What moved these 8 advisory board members to vote for a black box warning on Ritalin and its cousins?
Well, that's a really good question. The panel was convened by FDA to help the agency come up with better studies to look at a possible link between ADHD drugs and cardiovascular events like chest pain and irregular heartbeats. And that's sort of how the discussion started. But at some point during the day, the panel members started discussing the adverse events that were associated with the drugs, and the conversation turned to black box warnings for them. And at the end of the day, as you said, what you had was an advisory committee voting 8-7 to put these warnings on the drugs, which of course are the most stringent warnings that FDA can put on a drug to convey risks.
Remind us of the risks that they were focused on here.
And they were focused on cardiovascular events such as heart attacks and strokes. In some in children, but the panel members certainly pointed out that these risks are showing up prevalently in adults as well. Studies have shown that adults are taking them and having cardiovascular events.
That sounds risky. That sounds like a problem. Why not put a black box warning on?
Well, that's a good question. I think FDA at least feels uncomfortable with doing that right now. Several top officials said that the data is still inconclusive.
In spite of the advisory panel warning, the FDA is not likely to do it?
Well, FDA doesn't have to follow advisory panel suggestions. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Certainly the sense at the meeting was, on FDA's part, was, hey, let's do more studies on this. We're not ready to go there yet. And, FDA, of course, is has to evaluate whether the benefits of the drug on the market outweigh the risks associated with it.
So is there another level of study that will be done or may be done here or not?
I don't know. FDA has yet to come out with an answer on that.
And the prevalence of adult use, do you have a sense for how widespread it is today?
Well, some estimates say that 4% of adults have ADHD, and that's about 9 million people. According to FDA, the number of ADHD drug prescriptions written for adults rose 90% from March of 2002 to June of 2005. So that's a pretty significant increase.
A big number, up 90% in just 2 or 3 years there.
Yeah.
And the surge in use among children, that was kind of a 90s phenomenon, right?
Right, exactly.
So now we've got adults coming in. Catherine, thanks very much for giving us the debrief there.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Thanks,
Catherine Richard, associate editor of FDA Week. I'm joined now in the studio by Dr. Edward Hallowell. He's a psychiatrist, founder of the Hallowell Center for Cognitive and Emotional Health in Sudbury, Massachusetts. He has ADD himself. He's author of Delivered from Distraction, Getting the Most Out of Life with ADD. Dr. Hallowell, thanks very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you. I'm just astonished at that reporter. I wanted to interrupt. You blithely say, oh, and it's associated with cardiovascular events. Oh, well, then, gosh, why don't we put a black... I mean, that's such irresponsible reporting.
Speak to us. That's why you're here.
It's so appalling that she would say that and that you would sort of segue right in as, oh, yes, this is terrible. This is so upsetting.
My friend,
aspirin,
you're here exactly to elaborate on this. Please do.
Aspirin does far more damage to adults every year than stimulant medication does. I just got off the phone with Joe Lascalzo, who's physician in chief at Brigham and Women's Hospital and one of the leading cardiologists in the world, an editor at the New England Journal of Medicine. And we were talking about this very fact, you know, aspirin for adults is a far more dangerous drug. And yet, because of the sort of politics of it all, stimulant medication is enshrouded with is given this tremendous feeling of anxiety and fear. And it's almost to the point people ask me, do you believe in Ritalin? And I say, it's not a religious principle, you know, it's a medication. And what you and that reporter were just doing was such a good example. You were playing footsie with the facts, and you said, yeah, gosh, this is scary. Oh, this is scary. Mm. Well, let's put that black box right on there. You had no data. You had no numbers. In fact, the numbers that the advisory panel had were something like 25 sudden deaths, 19 were children, 6 were adults. Mm. And if you look at the rate of sudden death in the population at large, it exceeds that.
Here's the number that I've got, Dr. Hallowell. Members of the FDA Advisory Committee voted to put a black box warning on this. And these are not just people who walked in off the street. I'm looking here, Dr. Stephen Nissen, cardiologist at the Cleveland Clinic.
The man who said we don't want to have the man who said his sage advice.
Let me quote this for our listeners, and then we'll hear where he's coming from.
He said, I want the doctor's hand to tremble when they write this prescription.
Well, he said, this is out-of-control use of drugs that have profound cardiovascular consequences. We have got a potential public health crisis. I think patients and families need to be made aware of these concerns. He's on the FDA advisory panel. 8 of the 15 voted for it, 7 against. You say this is politics. What are the politics here, in your view?
Vioxx is the politics.
What does that have to do with
Ritalin? That means they're running scared. They've gotten burned by Vioxx, and now they're overreacting. They're in a cover-your-butt mode. They're overreacting because of Vioxx and what they're doing. Which
isn't this a different advisory panel from Vioxx, or is it the same one?
No, it's the same. It's the FDA. They're advising the FDA, and they don't.
Is it the same advisory panel that advised on Vioxx?
No.
So what's the cross-border responsibility
here? It's created a culture of fear around medications in general, and you're certainly better off with all medications to say, don't take them. Nobody is going to get upset if you say, don't take them. But what this is doing, and the reason it upsets me a lot, is you have parents of children around the country who are struggling with a condition that needs help. And now they feel as if they're playing Russian roulette with their children, which is simply not the case. If you look at the facts of the matter, stimulant medication, which has been around since 1937 in this country, when it is used properly, is safe and effective. Now, of course, it shouldn't be used willy-nilly. Of course, it shouldn't be dispensed as a performance-enhancing drug. But when it's used properly, it is a very safe medication if side effects are monitored, if the parent is properly informed, or if you're talking about adults, the same thing, if you don't prescribe it to someone with a pre-existing cardiac condition, if you take blood pressure, if you're aware.
We hear it. We hear it loud and clear, and I'm sure you prescribe plenty yourself.
I don't prescribe plenty myself, but I prescribe it appropriately and safely.
Have you prescribed hundreds or thousands of prescriptions?
Prescribe plenty. I just object.
Well, there's a volume here that's very intriguing to us.
Sure. No, I think the overuse of stimulant medication, I absolutely, in fact, I've written about.
Yeah.
I think we have a culture that is creating a condition that looks like ADD, and then the last thing those people need is stimulant medication. In fact,
and that's exactly the element of skepticism that comes in here. When people look at that culture, they say, "Well, how do we sort this out?"
Absolutely, but the way you sort it out is not by resorting to politics or saying, "Well, gee, I think this and I think that." You try to have some data, and the data is, when stimulant medication is used properly, it's safe and effective. Now, if you're using it to treat a condition that I call pseudo-ADD or a severe case of modern life, that's a big mistake. We are living in a culture that is way overstimulated electronically and underconnected interpersonally.
Every which way. What do you make of the surge in adult use of these drugs then, diagnosis and use?
I see two parallel trends. On the one hand, the good news is, there are adults out there who indeed have ADD whose lives are being dramatically changed for the better by the proper prescribing and use of the medication. On the other hand, you have adults out there who are simply living a life that's too fast, that's too electronically stimulated, that's too interpersonally disconnected. And that's probably the larger group. And the last thing they need is a stimulant medication.
You're saying the larger group of those now taking these drugs don't actually have the underlying problem? They're just...
No, I'm talking about the larger group who exhibit symptoms. I don't know the numbers of who's taking the medication. It'd be hard to find out. But I think the larger number... I think right now virtually half the country looks as if they have ADD, and clearly they don't. I mean, the 10%, 5% would be your estimate. So if you're seeing half the country look as if they have ADD, then we've got something else going on here, and I think we do have something else going on here. Now, the last thing those people need is stimulant medication.
Because
what they need to do is sit down and have family dinner. What they need to do is get off the internet. What they need to do is reclaim what I call the human moment, the personal relationship, the friendship, the time. We are, as a nation, we're losing the capacity to linger. We're losing the capacity to stop and think. We're losing the capacity to converse intelligently with another person. We're going so fast. And then we crave even more speed.
We're joined right now from New York City by Belinda Luscombe. She's arts editor at Time Magazine. She wrote about, not long ago, about a 5-day experiment of taking Ritalin in an article headlined 5 Guilt-Filled Days on the Big R. Belinda, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Why did you take it?
Well, I probably am what your previous guest would call an improper user of Ritalin. I'm probably a model of that. I wanted to take it to see if I could sort out my life. I'm an editor, at a New York City magazine, and, you know, I'm very busy. I've got 2 kids, and I wanted to see if maybe I could get a little bit more done, maybe get my desk tidy. And also, I was interested in those figures that a lot of people started taking this drug, and a lot of them are grown-ups, and I wanted to see what the effect was, and I wanted to see it as an adult who was, perhaps a little bit more reflective than a child could be about the way it changed them.
We're reading here about adults doing this. I mean, even mooching off their kids' supply. In one of your other Time publications, an adult talking about snorting crushed Ritalin pills. Was it in the air? Were colleagues talking about it? Do you feel that there are adults around you taking Ritalin as a performance-enhancing drug?
Well, if they are, they're not telling me. I did have advice from one of the science writers who has the next door office that I was exactly the wrong person to take Ritalin because I already am sort of A-type aggressive person. So, it was going to make my head explode. I think that was his actual quote. I'm not sure if that was a scientific diagnosis.
What was the experience like for you, Belinda?
It was fascinating. It was like, I'm actually Australian, and it was like when I first moved to Manhattan. To begin with, you're a little bit bewildered by everything that's going on, and then you suddenly become very exhilarated because there's so much to do, and then you become kind of, you have to watch out, or you become completely aggressive because you've got to get so much done, and there are, and there's just all the time push, 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 things to do. It felt like you that every task had to be done, that your life was all about getting the product done, getting the task done.
Mm.
It's not about process. It's about, okay, I'm going to get this done, and then I'm going to get this done.
So the focus was there, sort of relentlessly there.
It was there almost too much, and it was not, to me, a drug that helped me get things done, because a lot of the things that we as grown-ups in complicated lives have to do are quite nuanced, and you have to, come at a problem from a number of ways. If you had, 8 loads of laundry to do, it would be a great drug because it just makes you feel like, okay, let's go do it now.
But you also describe walking down the street, clenching and unclenching your fist, feeling increasingly aggressive. And again, as you say, you weren't the right target for this drug, but maybe you're the kind of people who are looking at it to get focused. What was that aggression like?
Well, it was weird because, as you say, yes, I was walking down the street and I'd noticed that I was clenching and unclenching my fists. It wasn't that I wanted to punch anybody. It's just, I had somewhere to go and I had sort of energy to get there and I was on my way. It was very purposeful. I think they took this out of the story. I would step out in front of cars. The moment that the traffic lights had stopped, I was there, even ones with New Jersey plates, which in this city
I dare you
very
to hit
dangerous.
Me.
Yeah, very dangerous thing to do. And, so it was very... And when I talked to people, I sometimes found myself being unnecessarily emphatic, would be a sort of a generous way of putting it. Mm.
You write, at the end, my life had become like a bad soccer game after 5 days in which there were lots of goals but no thrilling play on the field. Dr. Edward Hollowell, what do you hear in this story? This is, admittedly, Belinda says, I probably shouldn't have been taking this, but I thought maybe I can get focused and keep up with life in Manhattan. First, what do you think of her experience of it? Is this typical?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful example of the wrong use of the medication. It a lot of people do it with caffeine. You know, they keep pumping themselves full of Red Bull or Mountain Dew or coffee, you know, to excess, and they become similar to what she's describing. She did it with Ritalin. It's a bad thing to do, and it's dangerous. Your heart rate can go way up. Your blood pressure can go way up. You can develop an arrhythmia. This is not a good idea. It's a very, very bad idea. If you snort it, it's even more dangerous. So I hope her experience will caution others against misusing these medications, you know, and they've been around for a long time and they have been misused in various ways for a long time.
Belinda, we hear about people, some adults actually checking into rehab centers after getting hooked on this for weight loss or focus or performance enhancement. After 5 days, was it at all hard to walk away or were you glad to?
Oh, Lord, no, I was totally glad to be off it. I woke up 3 times a night. I was horrible to my children. It was a bad drug for me. And, you know, I have no idea what it's like to have ADD. I am what Dr. Halliwell described, somebody who needs to find time to linger and have no time. But, you know, for me, it was not a helpful drug. I work until about, you know, Friday mornings, 2 a.m., and I think I got out maybe 1 hour earlier. So it wasn't even like I got more done.
Well, but you did it.
And Belinda, your experience, not on Ritalin, but of having more to do than you have time to do it, is an epidemic in the country right now and one that we really need to address. There are people who are just at wit's end trying to somehow find more time in which to do all that they've committed to do.
But this may not be the
way to do it. This is the worst way to do it, yes.
Belinda Luscombe at Time Magazine, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us.
My pleasure.
Let me take a call. Dale is calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Dale. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Halliwell.
Hello.
I'm a 55-year-old woman who was diagnosed with ADD about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
I suspected all along that there was something going on with me. I've had symptoms since I was a young child, but I thought you had to be hyper. And I also thought that you grew out of it, and I am anything but hyper. I've been on, I started with Ritalin and went to Concerta. I'm now taking Adderall.
Is it working for you, Dale? Is it changing the way you feel, the way you behave?
It's a godsend. It doesn't cure my ADD, but it helps me to focus. It helps me to set priorities, and it helps me to filter out stimulation that has in the past overwhelmed me. I understand, you know, I've known that there were risks. There was a risk with every drug, but I've talked to my doctor, my prescribing doctor, about this, and he's reassured me. We've gone over my history, and I don't have any of the risk factors.
Is it making your life better? It sounds like it is.
Oh, it is, definitely. Now, it doesn't cure my ADD. I still have terrible problems with organization, but it does help me to get some sense of how to go about organizing my life. I have terrible problems with time management, and I half the time I'm in the house, I wear a timer around my neck.
So there's a thank heavens for Adderall. It's helped
right.
me out. Dale, let me bring that story to Dr. Halliwell. Ed, you've said that ADD is a gift that's hard to unwrap. What do you mean by that?
Well, you see, the current stereotype of ADD, it's made more prevalent because, as I say, the whole country looks as if it has ADD, doesn't understand the actual condition, which is... it's a very interesting kind of mind. On the one hand, the upside, these folks tend to be creative, original, intuitive. Mm. They have a special something about them. They're able to see into problems. They sort of get to solutions in unusual ways. Mm-hmm. They think outside the box. For example, the man who invented the electronic ticket that we all use on airlines now, David Neeleman, mm-hmm. he's the CEO of JetBlue Airlines. He has big-time ADD. And he told me, you know, when I thought of the electronic ticket, everyone laughed at me and said, no one will go to the airport without a paper ticket. Well, now we all do, and it saved the industry millions of dollars. And I somehow think it's appropriate that it should be someone with ADD who thinks of a way for us to go to the airport and not have to remember to bring our ticket. Anyway, there is this this side of...
That's funny. I just got it.
You just got it, right. Yeah, there is this side of ADD that is a gift. Then what gets in the way is the wrapping, the problems with organization, the problems with sustaining focus when something gets boring, the problems with the time management. In ADD, there really are only two times. There's now and there's not now. And if it's not now, it's not now. And so you see chronic procrastination, disorganization, trouble with follow through, tendency to be impulsive. Then you think about it, what is creativity but impulsivity gone right? So you can see impulsivity and creativity sort of go hand in hand.
A couple of questions. Yeah. Do you prescribe Ritalin or Adderall or one of these for everyone who you diagnose with ADD?
Absolutely.
Or you just say, no, you know, you've got it, but you're fine. Go forth and be intuitive.
Absolutely not.
What portion?
Well, it depends on the person. You see, I think another good thing out of this discussion is the non-medication methods for treating ADD never get talked about, and they're tremendously important. And
such as?
Right at the top of the list is identifying talents and strengths, because a lot of these folks really have only a dim sense of their talents and strengths, and they've gotten buried. Identifying talents and strengths and then developing a systematic plan to promote those
so
talents and strengths.
So they can pour themselves into the talents and strengths, they'll be less distracted.
No, exactly. When they're into something, they're super focused. And that's another myth. They can super focus at times. And what you want to do is help them develop those talents and strengths so that they can invent the electronic ticket, so that they can make their great contribution.
A lot of us feel jangled a lot. How do you decide whether this is just another modern jangled adult or somebody who's got ADD, ADHD?
And that is such an important question. The answer is you've got to go to see someone who really knows how to separate one from the other. How do you tell ADD from a severe case of modern life? And you do it by the history or doing what I call the Vermont test. You send them to a farm in Vermont, and if they start quietly plowing the fields, then it wasn't ADD. If they turn the farm into an amusement park, then it was ADD. And now the equivalent of the Vermont test that you can do in the office is a history, looking at the person in multiple settings and seeing if the downside is getting in the way, if they're underachieving, if they have a gift that they haven't been able to unwrap. But looking at it in those positive terms, you see, recruits energy and enthusiasm and optimism, which the negative way of looking at it disallows. I mean, I tell kids when I tell them ADD, I say, I have great news for you. You've got a race car brain. Your brain it can go like a Ferrari. You've got this incredible turbocharged brain.
Let's get it on the track.
Problem is you've got Chevrolet brakes.
Right.
You know, your brakes are not strong enough to slow down your Ferrari brain. And so putting it that way, the kid feels, or the adult feels, good, I've got this gift. Now I've got to work on my brakes. And that's a very accurate representation of what ADD truly is.
Let me take a call from Allison in Linfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Allison. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
We're good. What do you know, Allison?
Well, it's funny that this program came on when it did. About within the past week, my husband and I, our 7-year-old son, was diagnosed with ADHD. And in the process of doing a lot of research and reading and talking with our pediatrician and talking amongst each other, my husband is coming to the conclusion that this is something that he has struggled with since he was a child as well. And I just wanted to ask your guest about the correlation between, you know, the doctor keeps telling us there's a huge hereditary factor here, and that my husband is now thinking that maybe he would like to try going on some medication. He's a very successful businessman, but he's one of those people that the person that you just described is him.
And is he so seeing the result of the medication on your son and saying, oh, it worked for my son, maybe it would work for me?
It's only been a week, and the doctor told us initially you're going to see the placebo effect, and it's really too early, and it's really too low of a dosage, but we're seeing a difference, and his teachers are seeing a difference, and he is definitely a happier, more centered child than he was a week ago.
Allison, let me put it to Ed Hallowell. Dr. Hallowell, what do you say here?
If your first point, does it run in families? The answer is absolutely yes. Sue Smalley, professor of genetics at UCLA, has done a lot of work. Steve Ferrone here at Harvard Medical School have done a lot of work. This is clearly a genetically transmitted trait, and I like to think of it as a trait or a syndrome, not a disorder, because as I say, the upside is tremendous, and if you can unwrap this gift, it's wonderful. Now, your husband should not think of treatment as simply being medication, nor should your son. You want to have a comprehensive treatment plan that includes Identification of talents and strengths, a program for developing those. Exercise, there's evidence that a special form of physical exercise that stimulates the cerebellum, a region at the back of the brain, can really help with ADD. Diet and nutrition, evidence that omega-3 fatty acids supplementation can help with ADD. Evidence that mindfulness, learning, meditation, and certain kinds of mindfulness skills can help with ADD. Adding structure to your environment, environmental engineering, you know, getting the right filing system, the right color coding system, the right whatever it might happen to be. All of that and is just crucial. And to think of it as simply a matter of taking a pill is just not you will not get the optimal outcome. And particularly in your son, your husband, who are just starting, you want to enter into this knowing what you're doing. And so education in many ways is the first step in treatment.
Mm-hmm. There's a bigger picture. Allison, we wish you luck with it. I want to welcome into our conversation from Columbus, Ohio, Dr. Carl Tischler. He's a psychologist in private practice there, adjunct professor of psychology at Ohio State University. Dr. Tischler, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Ed Halliwell is filling out the picture on ADD, ADHD for us, yet we're looking at this black box warning that turned a lot of heads. We look at the growth in the prescription, and particularly among adults, and it leaves us scratching our heads sometimes. Are we overdiagnosing ADD in this country?
Well, I would certainly agree to that to a certain extent, that there are other disorders that look an awful lot like ADHD. If you go through the diagnostic and statistical manual for psychiatric illness, there are 15 or 20 different ones that have problems with attention and concentration. And so to make the diagnosis of ADHD on the basis of a checklist or a teacher pushing a pamphlet at a parent or something like that, I think is a disservice to the individual who's being diagnosed.
And what do you make of this tremendous surge in the amount of Ritalin prescribed to adults, up 90% between 2002 and 2005? First of all, is that a tremendous surge? And what do you make of it?
Seems to me, and those are very effective commercials on television. I think that, you know, if we read a medical book such as the Merck Manual, we will develop symptoms similar to what we read about. And I think that there's some truth to if we see a disease on TV, I think we tend to want to, we might have it if we have some difficulty with focus and attention. And there are things that might manifest itself in terms of you know, problems with attention. If a person is extremely anxious, if they're very depressed.
Do you see adults now turning to this simply to enhance performance?
Oh, yes, and we see that in the high schools and the colleges a lot as well, where it's always good, if you're a college student living in a dorm, to have a next-door neighbor in the dorm room who is attention deficit, because then you can buy some of their Adderall.
For what?
Well, it'd be for an exam. You want to study.
Sean's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Sean, you're on the air.
How you doing?
We're good. What do you know, Sean?
Well, I was a student taking Ritalin for a while. I mean, I took it growing up. And probably, I don't know, after high school, I think I took it the first year of college, and then I just kind of took myself off of it.
How old were you when you started taking Ritalin, Sean?
I was about 13 or 14.
Okay, and then right into your freshman year in college, and how do you look at it now?
I think it's honestly like a quick answer. I mean, one thing Dr. Halliwell mentioned is that, you know, people take it in place of caffeine, but in no way is it caffeine. I mean, it's an amphetamine. It's a stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
And your body associates it as a reward-benefit situation. You know, you take the stimulant, and you do your homework. And
are you glad you took it, or do you see a better way?
I think there is a better way. I think at the time it worked for me, but at the same time, I think through discipline, physical fitness, you know, working with teachers, working, you know, for alternatives. I mean, you mentioned different filing systems and
mm-hmm.
everything along those lines. I think those are great alternatives.
So you're glad to be off it now. Have you found those alternatives? Are they working for you?
Yeah, no, and I'm in a fortunate position to have found those alternatives. I'm not discrediting the drug. I don't think it's, you know, totally unusable, but
yep.
At the same time, I think it's overprescribed. It's a quick solution. People find that it's, you know, the easy way out.
Sean, we appreciate your call. Dr. Tischler, what portion of people who do have ADD, ADHD as kids, grow out of it as adults?
Well, this is a sort of a clinical opinion, and I have not seen any data on that, but my clinical opinion is about 75% of the kids would grow out of it, and about 25% would continue to need some form of either psychological treatment, such as biofeedback and practice with that kind of thing, or some kind of medication. I think there has been a real press in this in our world to say that this is something that you never grow out of. And I have seen many of my patients, when they are past the angst of being a teenager, no longer need this. And in children, we see a lot of kids who are back to the misdiagnosis with a diagnosis that I've coined, which is called ASD, which is attention-seeking disorder.
So pay attention to me somehow.
It may be a child who's caught in the middle of a divorce. We see a lot of these children who are, so anxious and so troubled that they frequently look like they have ADHD. But in terms of growing out of it, I think that is definitely a process, that it is a neurological condition, that sometimes that the neurology of the person grows up.
And what about adults and this just overall? In the quiet of doctor's offices, are people getting accurately diagnosed and prescribed, or are Americans asking for this and getting it when they shouldn't?
Well, that's something I can speak to, and I think it's unfortunate, but, in situations in the family practitioner's office when they don't want to send to a specialist or the insurance doesn't cover it, they use a quick checklist, and that diagnoses the problem. And, we're in a society now where you're not a happy patient. You're not even a patient anymore. You're a consumer when you go to the doctor, and you're not a happy person if you don't leave with a prescription, and the physician knows that.
And I think you're absolutely right. This is to be, deplored. We really don't want to be dispensing this medication as a sort of a happy pill, and making a diagnosis based on a, nine symptom checklist.
But the implication there from Dr. Tischler, I guess that is going on sometimes. So
it absolutely is. There's no doubt about it.
Shop well, shop wise. Don't insist on getting it if you don't need it.
Exactly.
That, we're out of time. Carl Tischler in Columbus, Ohio, at Ohio State University there. Thank you very much for being with us in this
hour. Thank you, sir.
And Dr. Edward Hallowell, founder of the Hallowell Center for Cognitive and Emotional Health in Sudbury, Massachusetts. Dr. Hallowell, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.